Washington came first and he was perfect. John Adams kept us out of war with France. Jefferson made Louisiana Purchase. In 1812, James Madison kicked the British in the pants. James Monroe told Europe they could suck it. John Quincy Adams looked just like his dad. Andrew Jackson got rid of all the Indians. Van Buren served one term, but he wasn't bad. William Henry Harrison died early. John Tyler annexed Texas from Mexico. James K. Polk fought Mexico to keep it. Taylor was a Mexican war hero. Fillmore gave a boat to Commodore Perry. Pierce repealed the Missouri Compromise. Buchanan saw the Civil War's beginnings. Lincoln saved the Union, then he died.
The 7 Day Scholar, The Presidents, Exploring History One Week at a Time, is area professor Dennis Gaffney's book, which addresses formative moments in the lives of the presidents, crucial political decisions, little-known facts, and insights into the intriguing individuals Americans have selected to lead our country. Each chapter includes 7 related narrative entries, one for each day of the week, as well as covering each president. The book includes chapters on the best and worst writers and speakers, most controversial elections, scandals, most controversial foreign policy decisions, the peacemakers, first ladies, the best and worst presidents. Oh, there's all kinds of good stuff. Dennis Gaffney is an adjunct professor at the University at Albany SUNY and also a journalist who has written for the New York Times, Mother Jones, and Reader's Digest. The book is The Presidents, The 7 Day Scholar, Exploring History One Week at a Time. And it's a great pleasure to welcome you to the program. Thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Good to be here.
I am, you did this for the Civil War as well.
I did. That was the first book in the series. Yep.
What got you thinking about doing this in a one-week-at-a-time fashion?
Well, this was the idea really came from my brother. It was a collaborative effort, and he's an executive at the History Channel, and he knows what people are interested in. He knows they love history, but he knows they also like it in smaller pieces. So the idea was, at first, his first idea was to produce an encyclopedia. My reaction was, let's do stories. We do a story a day, a narrative a day, a mini essay for each of these pages. So people can zip through the book from beginning to end, or they can hop around with what they're interested in with these individual stories.
So if you say, I want to read about Teddy Roosevelt today, you can dip in.
You can dip in.
You can do the whole week. You can do a couple days.
Yep. Depends what you're interested in.
It's a free country.
It's a free country.
Do whatever you want. Is it difficult to put a president in context when you are putting it into 7 sound bites, really?
Well, it's, what we did is the more interesting and important presidents we gave more space to. But still, it was a challenge. What we did was look for stories that were indicative of the personalities, stories that were indicative of the times, and stories that were off the beaten path. We were given free license by our editor to really look for stories that were more interesting, that you don't read all the time.
But obviously there's things, there are the greatest hits, right? There's things you have to write about.
We had to do the greatest hits. But we also, we went off, for example, I'll give you an example. When we wrote about the most interesting first ladies, there's Eleanor Roosevelt, there's Hillary Clinton, there's Dolly Madison. But we picked a few wild cards, for example. One of them is Edith Wilson. Edith Wilson is not known to most people today, but she really, a lot of historians think she ran the country when Woodrow Wilson has his stroke. And it's a very controversial time. So there's somebody who people don't know about. We write about her. We also write about Betty Ford. Betty Ford is not considered one of the giants of the first ladies, but she is a fascinating character, somebody who goes against her husband, speaks out on the ERA. She's for gay rights. She's for abortion rights. She really goes her own way. And she's really the first of the modern feminist first ladies. And so we go in different directions at times.
In taking on each president, you want to, you have, so 7 days worth of information on those presidents. And then, as I mentioned, you have these other lists that you do. It would seem to me that that is really where there is some editorial license, right? I mean, obviously in the presidential stuff, but maybe not as much because you are dealing with facts in history where in the back you're saying, okay, here's who we think are the best presidents, the worst presidents. And obviously that's up for debate.
Sure. It's not a science.
Right.
Everyone has their favorite presidents, and everyone has the presidents they like the least. So there was, there was license there, and we tried to be a bit provocative at times, and we tried to keep things interesting,
When you put it into perspective and you look at the men that have held this office— Do you, because I think you do, but I'm interested in your insight into this of what you take away of what these men possess to hold that office.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know too many people who could say that's a job I could do.
I think that's true. What's interesting is there's all kinds of people who do hold the office. There's people who don't have the qualifications. There are people who do a miserable job of it. There's a good number. There's a number of competitors for worst presidents. Right. Millard Fillmore and Franklin Pierce and James Buchanan before the Civil War, who really are on the wrong side of history. They support slavery, and they're considered by historians to be among the worst because of that. But the what really makes a good president, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I'm asking about what ultimately it takes of when you look at these individuals,
right.
As you have individually, are there traits that they possess that say, because to me it takes a tremendous ego,
ambition
to say I can run the entire country and be a dominant part of the world stage.
Sure, you need a huge ego. You need tremendous ambition. What they find usually is when they get into office, they cannot do all they dream of doing. But they need those qualities. To be a good president, though, you need more than ambition. And one of the surprises for us was the great presidents we found were great listeners. They really do respond to the needs of the people at the times. You have somebody like Franklin Roosevelt who responds to the Great Depression and then the rise of the fascists, two of the greatest challenges of the 20th century. And he does what the people need. During the Depression, he responds to the needs through some of the greatest domestic legislation in history, Social Security and all the other, the alphabet soup of programs that he does to get America back to work. Social Security is a great example. He doesn't come up with that idea on his own. He's pushed to do so by people like Huey Long, who has a program, Share the Wealth, that he's pushing hard for. And Roosevelt sees him as a challenger. And what he does is respond to that need and gets that legislation passed because he's a great politician as well.
My mother always used to say, and I thought of this often as I was reading the book, of obviously there's a call to service, and obviously there is a want of power and a feel that you can do good.
Right.
But you got to be a little nuts to take on. Like, why would you want that?
To go
out and seek it.
Well, there is.
And maybe more so today than in the days past.
Well, there's a lot of, there's a streak of craziness in some of these men. I think of someone like, Lyndon Johnson, who was tremendously ambitious, larger-than-life figure, but he does have ambitions to improve the country, and he does do so through his civil rights legislation, and he also does so through his Medicare and Medicaid bills, and those are things that really change the country forever, for the better.
When you stated earlier that you were looking for, there are the greatest hits, as we mentioned, but there are also these events that have kind of been buried in history in little nuggets that you've taken out, and they're fascinating.
Yeah.
How do you come across those?
Well, the way we approached the book, there's so many books written about the presidents,
right.
is we went to the historic sites, and there's historians at each of these historic sites, and there's practically one for every president. And they would guide us in the readings, and they would guide us in the stories as well, because they're often dealing with the public as well. And then we would again look for stories that were indicative of the personalities. One, for example, I think of Andrew Jackson. Speaking of ambitious and semi-insane people, Andrew Jackson qualifies, I think. Somebody who got involved in a duel before he was president. Wasn't a young man, 39 years old. And in the duel, there's two strategies you can use. And this was a story I wasn't familiar with. But you can either shoot first and hope you kill your opponent, or you can take the bullet and hope they don't kill you and shoot back. And Andrew Jackson, who is a man of passion, decides to take the bullet. And the man who shoots him, Charles Wilkinson, thinks he misses him, but he actually shoots Jackson right in the chest, and the bullet lodges right next to his heart. He takes the bullet, shoots back, kills Wilkinson, and he says afterwards, "If he had shot me through the head, I would have killed him." So he's a man of emotion and passion, and ends up, I think, doing a lot of. He's one of the overrated presidents, I think, Andrew Jackson.
We often hear in during a presidency, especially in a second term, where the legacy factor starts to come in, and presidents are concerned about what their legacy will be. For you as a historian, I would think it's easier to write about those that you've had, you know, before we were born, as it were, because history has had a time to kind of hash it all out, where it's much more difficult to write about a George W. Bush or Bill Clinton.
Sure, much more difficult. And reputations change. I think we were talking about Truman before. Truman's reputation, when he leaves office, he's a very unpopular man. He has the lowest approval rating, one of the lowest approval ratings in the history of the Gallup poll. But over time, his reputation grows, and people begin to see that what he did and what he tried to do were good things. The containment policy abroad. A lot of the programs that he tries to push domestically do not get passed, but they're followed up. His health care plan, for example, does not get passed when he's president. When LBJ passes his health care programs, he brings Truman into the White House out of respect for his attempts to do so. So there is reputations change. Eisenhower as well. Eisenhower was dismissed at the time he left office, but he was now he's considered to be among the top 10 presidents by a number of historians because he kept the peace, and he also promoted prosperity for those years. And those are two things that Americans, I think, care about deeply.
And you look at former presidents here and how they have in some ways resurrected their legacy and how history looks at them. Carter, of course, you mentioned George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton and how they've worked together for good over the years. So there's some damage control that can be done as well.
There is damage control. Well, Carter's an interesting example. Carter, you know, leaves the office, and he's still considered by a number of people to be one of the worst presidents. He's not a good politician. Doesn't have the optimism, obviously, of a Ronald Reagan or a spirit of an FDR. But after he leaves office, because of what he does in his post-presidency, you know, he starts Habitat for Humanity. He becomes a diplomat abroad. He's really one of the things he does is he finishes he helps eradicate the guinea worm disease in Africa. And now when people rate presidents for their moral center, he's often rated amongst the highest of presidents. So his reputation changed because of what he does after he was in office.
Dennis Gaffney has written this book with his brother Peter. It is entitled The Presidents, The Seven-Day Scholar Exploring History, One Week at a Time. It is published by Hyperion. Dennis will be at the Bookhouse in Stuyvesant Plaza on Thursday night at 7 o'clock for a book signing and a talk about the presidents. You can also hear him lecture on the presidents on Sunday, April 22nd at 2 o'clock at the Albany Institute of History and Art in Albany, New York. And that, again, is Sunday, April 22nd at 2 o'clock. And for more information about the Bookhouse book signing, which is this Thursday night at 7 o'clock, you can go go to bhny.org. Dennis Gaffney, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much.
Joe, thank you for having me.
Again, the name of the book is The Presidents, published by Hyperion. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.